It's March 19th, and this is the Civil War Podcast. It was on this day in 1863 that a public meeting was held in the town of Stalybridge, England, to protest the British government's response to the cotton famine. Stalybridge and other cities across the northeastern county of Lancashire were the heart of Britain's booming textile manufacture. In the peak year of 1860, the cotton mills employed 500,000 factory workers. This booming industry was dependent on American cotton, and American cotton was dependent on British buyers. 80% of Britain's cotton came from the United States, representing over 70% of the U.S. crop. At the outbreak of the war, the Union adopted Winfield Scott's Anaconda Plan, which called for a blockade of the major Confederate ports and sought to seize control of the Mississippi River. The Anaconda aimed to put the squeeze on the South financially by choking off the exports of its most lucrative crop. Strangely, the choke had been applied a year earlier within the cotton states themselves. The suggestion had come from a speech by South Carolina Senator James Henry Hammond. "Without firing a gun, without drawing a sword, should they make war on us, we could bring the whole world to our feet. What would happen if no cotton was furnished for 3 years? England would topple headlong and carry the whole civilized world with her, save the South. No, you dare not make war on cotton. No power on the earth dares to make war upon it. Cotton is king." The policy became known as King Cotton. Planters flexed their economic muscles by refusing to sell or ship their crops. Cotton prices would soar, and intervention for the Confederacy by the British and French would surely follow, to alleviate the depression in Europe's textile industry. The planned cotton famine was delayed because the bumper crops of 1860 were still bulging British warehouses by the outbreak of the war. By the time the Confederacy was in urgent need of funds, the blockade of the South's ports, which had emphasized those used heavily for cotton trading, was restricting its ability to ship the bales Europe so desperately wanted. Prices for raw cotton climbed, and the cost of the finished goods impacted sales. The surplus of 1860 cotton was depleted, and 500,000 workers in Lancashire's mills found themselves in dire straits. Unemployment became rampant, and the paltry relief offered to impoverished workers became a national issue at a time when the lower classes were rumbling for political reform. The British government was still dominated by the landed gentry, whose inherited privileges and power lent to a natural sympathy for the southern planter class. For the first 2 years of the war, Britain had been threatening to intervene in the American conflict and recognize the Confederacy. These threats were checked by Lincoln's preliminary Emancipation Proclamation in September of 1862. Britain's Slavery Abolition Act had passed 30 years earlier with widespread popular support. Despite their hardships, most of Britain's textile workers endorsed the United States' cause of freedom and its republican ideals, affirming their support in union meetings and public letters. English journalist Frederick Chesson wrote of these events, "The great meetings which have been held in London and various parts of the country to express sympathy with the anti-slavery policy of the American government indicate what is the true state of public feeling on this side of the Atlantic. The working classes also have proved to be sound to the core whenever their opinion has been tested. Witness the noble demonstration of Manchester operatives the other day, when 3,000 of these noble sons of labor, many of whom were actual sufferers from the cotton famine, adopted by acclamation an address to President Lincoln, sympathizing with his proclamation. A friend of mine who was present on the occasion tells me that in the heartiness and enthusiasm of the working men were something glorious, that he heard them say to one another that they would rather remain unemployed for 20 years than get cotton from the South at the expense of the slave." In recognition of this, Lincoln responded with a sympathetic address to the cotton workers, written to whet their appetite for political reform and with the intention of being distributed and adopted widely in other public meetings. The American government also sent several symbolic boatloads of food to the people of Lancashire. For these kindnesses, Lincoln was remembered with a statue in Manchester. By contrast, knee-jerk legislation, enacted tardily by Parliament during the cotton famine, prompted scorn and violent reactions. When the decision was made to replace cash relief with tickets for local stores, riots erupted. The worst was at Staley Bridge, where mobs destroyed mill machinery and looted shops. As the North gained control of the Mississippi and the cotton ports, shipments to Europe resumed. By 1864, employment levels had returned to normal, but the support for political reform remained strong. The Reform Act of 1867 was brought about in the wake of the war, when the lower classes who had supported the Union demanded more democracy and influence in the political system. The bill extended the franchise to all householders, thus opening the vote up to the working classes. In words reappropriated from Lincoln's address, the British working classes achieved the ultimate and universal triumph of justice, humanity, and freedom. You've been listening to the Civil War Podcast, a weekly podcast researched, written, and read by Aaron McGuire, with music by Tom Nagy. Thank you for listening.